Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good pace. Are you serious? Oh, my goodness! Glorious and free! We're storming the 18th green now. They just tackled Adam Hadwin, by the way, who was trying to approach his friend. Security did, not knowing that's exactly who it was. But Canada has a conquering hero.
The crowd support was the most unbelievable thing I've probably ever experienced in my life. To kind of break that curse, if you want to call it, is I'm pretty speechless. I don't think it's going to sink in for quite some time what happened today.
Go Canada, baby. The golden putt. Where were you when Canadian sports lore was written yesterday?
A real heritage moment.
It
Get
sure
the Photoshops
was.
Ready. That's a real one.
What an incredible weekend for the Canadian Open. Nick Taylor did it, baby. I'm still kind of I feel goofy this morning because of what we saw yesterday. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really sunk in. It's been, 12 hours?
There was also a mishap, early mishap.
We had a tough start to the week. Justin and I are sitting here getting excited, getting ready to get on the show about 20 minutes ago, and I tipped over a large piping hot coffee all over the desk, mm-hmm. on my laptop, on my body.
Another heritage moment.
Yeah, it was all over the... Everything's working, but if I just cease to make noise sometime, it's because the water and the coffee have mm-hmm. mixed into the electrical systems. But we're good. We're on the air. We're good.
That coupled with Nick Taylor, like there's a bit
Too
of a different
excitement.
Vibe this morning. A lot of loopiness.
And we have
loopy
a wonderful...
excitement.
Intern joining us.
With like a really great Canadian name, too.
Alain. This is my French.
Why did you pause?
Because I was nervous. And he just witnessed that. The first impression
yes,
I make
he did.
Is pouring
he did.
Coffee all over me. I swear we're bigger pros than that. What an
exciting. So welcome to
Alain. Yes. Well, welcome to the show, Al. Here we are. I'm feeling better. The coffee's seeping into my bloodstream through my mm-hmm. skin. We're ready to
it's
rumble.
A different way to intake, but it still works.
We're ready to rumble. The Canadian Open, the biggest win for them in terms of an incredible storyline. You could not have scripted Saturday, Sunday, I guess Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday any better than seeing what we saw with Nick Taylor in the playoff multiple overtimes.
Mm-hmm.
Against
Fourth
Tommy
overtime.
Fleetwood. I guess the only thing this could have been sweeter is if it was against like Rory.
Tommy Fleetwood's pretty good. You might have needed Tommy Fleetwood there because Tommy Fleetwood is like historically a bit of a choker. Mm. So it's not like Nick Taylor, it's not like you're overcoming, it's not like he wasn't capable of overcoming a Rory McIlroy in the moment. But like, I think there was nervousness between both of them. And Tommy Fleetwood certainly showed it. But I think Nick Taylor was kind of showing it as well. There were some squirrely shots. In that playoff, like
it
those guys
wild.
Were trying to hand it to each other. Tommy Fleetwood got lucky. We'll go through all of it.
Yeah.
But like there were some squirrely shots. It looked like the nerves was going, the rain coming down, a lot of pressure, 69 years. But eventually it was not about, you know, it wasn't even about shot making or just making par or making a mistake or whatever, making a birdie the normal way. It was like a miracle putt
it was.
Of over 70 feet that got it done. And I don't know what would have happened if it didn't go in. But it felt like it needed that sort of moment where it was just like beyond expectation. And that's exactly what we saw with that 70-foot putt.
Okay, the 70-foot putt, let's start with that because 72-foot, 6-inch eagle putt, I would just love to even quadruple putt that in.
Yeah,
honestly,
you might have needed 6 there.
Based
on how you
would've.
Putted over the last couple weeks,
if I could,
70 feet.
I'm going to Michael Block this. If I could just putt like both of them. I mean, Tommy Fleetwood's putting was dialed. He was the best putter in the entire weekend. But if I could putt like them, I'd be LPGA, just
and
like Michael Block.
Taylor was hitting, forget the four overtimes, but he was hitting putts everywhere, knocking them
they
down
were dialed.
At every turn. I mean, he did open the Canadian Open with a 3-over-75. He had to make up 20 shots.
It's incredible.
Over three rounds, and then he had to eagle another hole in the playoff. So he had to absolutely score nonstop. And the only way to score on the PGA Tour is to just basically not miss putts, which is what Nick Taylor was doing throughout the entire tournament.
Okay, so walk me through the 72-foot putt, because I'm not I'm watching thinking...
Me walk you?
Well, your emotions, because I don't think everyone thought that he was going to drain this 72-foot putt for eagle to win, but there was, like, this part of my brain watching it is like, this would be pretty... I don't even know how I would... How would you react? How would the fans react? And you're watching it, and I'm seeing Tommy Fleetwood in the background, and he's walking a bit, like, when someone shoots a putt, you can move a bit, and then he kind of stops. It's like he was realizing the moment might actually happen, and obviously we heard all the calls for the putt was incredible, but you're watching the ball... And you're just watching it get closer and closer, and you start thinking, no way. Like, this isn't really, we're not going to actually witness this fairy tale moment. And it goes in, and then it's just absolute chaos and scenes and the putter flip and the tackle. Like, so much happens in this 20-second span from when the ball moves from his putter into the hole. It honestly felt like you were having an out of body experience watching this moment happen. It was absolutely the most incredible way. Completely different if he has, like, you know, a four putt and Tommy Fleetwood misses. Like, yeah, he had the moment.
I think anyone realistically would be hoping that he can just walk up and tap it in.
Yeah.
And then you're putting pressure on the putt for Fleetwood, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that would be the best case scenario. Not the worst case, but if you seed over... the order, and you go back to Fleetwood, and Fleetwood has a chance to knock down a putt, and then you have to make it. That's kind of the worst case scenario, because he was in the driver's seat. He was on in two. Fleetwood was on there with, like, no gimme in terms of a birdie putt. So he was definitely in control. It was just like, have a great lag putt, and you're probably going to win the tournament despite all the putts that
Tommy Fleetwood was making. But to do it on an eagle, 72 feet.
But to just leave no doubt, to not give yourself that, oh, I have to stand over this four-footer and put it in, like, that would have been a little uncomfortable. So not that he needed it again. But it was, like, such a release and such a moment. We're talking about moments in Canadian sports history. I mean, that was more of a moment than most golf moments, most, like, decisive golf moments where it's just like, hey, I've got three putts to win it, and here's a lag putt from 8 feet, and I'm just going to tap it in and go home. Like, that's kind of what you get out of golf more often than not. It's not a miracle, which this seemed to be. If you hit a putt from 70 plus feet, if it's the longest putt made in your pro PGA Tour career, like, yeah, that's sort of like miracle stuff. And there are, like, little miracle tidbits, which is very Canadian. Canadiana was, like, on an all-time high here, but it deserved to be, because it was one of those all-time moments. It was a where were you moment, and I think that's actually important, like, how you actually consumed it, what your reaction was. You were definitely pulling for him the whole time, given that you had him in the FanEx Cup. But, like, I didn't. I had Fleetwood, and I was jumping off my couch with excitement when he made that putt.
So,
because it is, I don't really
things are bigger than
often.
Our competition.
Of course, and it wasn't because of that, but, like, that was a legitimate, euphoric Canadian moment on Canadian soil, and a definite where were you moment.
And I think this is a great way to segue into the big question that we want to ask today, and I'm sure it's not going to be the only time that it's asked over the next 24 hours, but we have been lucky to see a lot of incredible moments in Canadian sports history, whether Olympic-related, national pride related, team sport, individual sport. So this is the big question, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot of input from the text line. So we're going to open that up at 590-590. Where does this rank in a moment in Canadian sports history? Is it on your Mount Rushmore? Is it the best? Is it top three? We've wrote a couple down in terms of contenders. I wasn't alive for some of the big ones, so I might be jaded in terms of, like, what is recency bias, but this has got to be on Mount Rushmore for me. We'll have you guys send your text in at 590-590 of your Canadian sports Mount Rushmore, because he's got a face on my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I think it's, like, it depends on how you categorize it, though. Like, if you're doing Canadian moment, so Canadian on Canadian soil, definitely. Like, you're only talking about Sidney Crosby, Golden Goal, and that's a team sport, so you can even go individual. But does it beat Bianca Andreescu at the U.S. Open? Does it beat Donovan Bailey, 96 Olympics? I mean, I think there's a bit of a debate there. But in terms of, like, home soil, Canadian, on Canadian soil, I think you got this. Sid, Brooke Henderson winning the Canadian Open herself. I don't know if there's much after that, so that would definitely qualify as Mount Rushmore.
I would say Canadians or Canadian things on Canadian soil would be Jays, probably back-to-back World Series champions, but...
That's not Canadians, though.
Well, it's a Canadian team.
Yeah.
People will put
that
in
there.
That's
why I kind of, like, put I think that's a new, different category.
Yeah, there can be different categories, but like, you know, take your own perspective on it.
I don't think you can like really compete with a championship, but again.
Because Raptors championship will be one. Jays back-to-back world championships, World Series champions would be one. Obviously, if you were alive for any time the Maple Leafs won the Stanley Cup, that's going to count. Those are team-related sports, so maybe you put a bit of different spin on how you view that. Obviously, Mike Weir winning the Masters. If you're trying to put this in Canadian golf history,
can it beat a Masters win?
Can, like, the Masters are the Masters. It's really hard to beat the Masters, but a walk-off triple OT win on home soil, 69 years since somebody won the Canadian Open. You're a Canadian doing a playoff.
That's
important. Hard to beat.
That's important too, because this has been something that's hung over this tournament for so long. It's not that it's illegitimized it in any way, but it's always been this thing like, oh, why can't we get great champions at the RBC Canadian Open? Like, it was back-to-back Jonathan Vegas. You saw it up close
Jonathan
and personal.
Jonathan Vegas, my guy.
Like, no, you know, no offense to Jonathan Vegas, but you're not looking for, hey, the person who's going to win the Caribbean Open that follows the PGA Championship. You're looking for someone who's going to come back, hold the trophy to massive fanfare. And having Rory McIlroy win it 2 years in a row is great. I mean, really, really good for the tournament, despite it being cursed with all these announcements happening around the Canadian Open the last couple of years. But this was bigger. This was what it's supposed to produce. It's Canada's national championship, and yet a Canadian could not, for the life of them, win it. And there are more Canadians in this tournament than any other tournament that you'll see on the PGA Tour. So the odds should have been over 69 years that, yeah, someone would finally break through, especially when the likes of Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm don't show up at it. So if you can't have the best field, then you want to see Canadians have success. And it's something that both have eluded this tournament. And having Rory win a couple times and then having Nick Taylor, a Canadian, do what he did and end Rory's streak, not that Rory was directly involved, pretty impressive. Like, really, really big for the tournament, helping legitimize the tournament, helping it go to the next level, helping more Canadians get into golf, and making sure that more Canadians are winning events on the PGA Tour like they are this year. Fourth Canadian to win on the PGA Tour just this year alone is remarkable. And it says something about Canadian golf. And it's probably fitting that this year, when Canada's players are on such a high level, that we finally broke through at the RBC Canadian Open.
Yeah, the context of all of that, the electrifying moment, all the fanfare around it, the entire weekend, the singing of Canada at the rink hole, the way that the Canadian golfers, we can get into more of the moment now. You send your text in at 59590. I'll read a couple. We already got some in there. The Canadian golfers all on the side of the green watching, cheering them on. Like, it's an individual sport. It's competitive. But this is something special. You're going to see your teammate, your buddy, your friend make a moment in Canadian sports history. The fact that a lot of them came back to the course to watch, to be there, to celebrate authentically for somebody that they understood the moment. Adam Hadwin getting absolutely steamrolled by security is like one of the funniest things I've seen this year in sports. They're on the side of the green. They win. He grabs his big bottle of champagne. He's running out. Pops the champagne mid-spray, and this security guard had him locked in his vision.
He saw him on one side of Taylor and his caddy, and the latest angle of it, where you can see him on one side and see, like, the eye contact pass through bodies.
He's locked
and he's coming
in on
around like a linebacker. Like, the camera's in the backfield, and a linebacker is making its move around blocks, and this guy almost knocked Nick Taylor over, hit the umbrella that the caddy was holding, and absolutely got both hands locked underneath the butt
pretty
of
good at
Adam
tackle.
Hadwin and tackle. Like, it was a
CFL
form tackle.
CFL just started. This guy should be trying to walk on.
He should
on.
Be. He definitely should be.
And then there's so much good Twitter content. You know, Adam Hadwin takes to Twitter. He's like, I'm good. Like, I made it. And his wife's hilarious on Twitter. And then, you know, the bottle, it's like the bottle is now, should be in the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame and the cork. And anyway, they all had so much fun with it, but just really great to see them there cheering on their Canadian teammate. That moment is so special.
That's what I love about this moment. It was very Canadian. Like, Adam Hadwin getting tackled.
And he apologized. He apologized to security guard.
All of it. Yeah, all of it is so Canadian, because it would only, it's there. If it's going to be truly Canadian, it's got to be a little goofy. Like, we're a little goofy.
The whole thing was goofy.
And a little weird.
Saying, you know, Canada, the wrinkle. Like,
the wrinkle, the tackle, the apologies. The security guard is apologizing right away. And just Canadians supporting Canadians is actually a really cool thing. Like everyone being on Nick Taylor's side, it being a raucous environment for someone that is their own is very, very cool. It must have been a little tough if you're Tommy Fleetwood. But Canadians supporting Canadians has always been a great thing. And that extends beyond the crowd because you're right. Corey Connors hanging around. Mike Weir hanging around. Adam Hadwin hanging around. And them being so euphoric and so happy. Everyone in that area being so happy was such a cool moment. And it is hilarious that we have the Adam Hadwin footage, that we have the videos, that we have the Twitter commentary. But all of that, plus the toonie hole, like it just makes it so nerdy, so nerdy Canadian, so much Canadiana wrapped up in like one moment. It is a perfect moment for Canadian athletics.
So the toonie hole, if you haven't seen it yet, this is where, you know, obviously we know about the Vancouver Winter Olympics when the similar thing happened, but the guy sets up the pins on 18, stuck a toonie to the bottom of the hole, and look what happened. And I know this is, it's the little Canadian tidbit that makes the story even better, that the guy thought, I'm going to do this thing, and then they win, and we flip over the hole, and there's a toonie there. It's pretty cool.
And they played 18 three times.
They sure
and
did.
18 was, you know, if you're going to put a toonie anywhere, 18 makes sense. But, like, it could have ended on the other hole, the par three that they played with, you know, I mean, there was definitely planning there, but it seems random that you play 18 twice, then one par three, and then go back to 18 immediately. but, yeah, I mean, the putt, a miracle putt, had to go in a hole with a toonie stuck to the bottom of it. That's just how it goes in Canadian lore.
The call, Jim Nantz, we played it coming in, glorious and free. That moment, like these are big iconic sports. You know about that. Big iconic sports calls that we're going to hear a long time over and over again. It's like the golden goals got one. The golden putts got one. Everything has this moment that we're going to see and we're going to hear. And it's going to be replayed for time and time again. Just a really nice touch to have that as well. Lets the moment breathe. You're watching on TV, flabbergasted that this is happening. Just seeing everyone storm the green as well. We're going to have, oh, by the way, we're going to have Adam Stanley on, of course. He's going to join us at 8. We're going to have Gunnar on, who was there walking around the course, feeling it up close and personal. We'll have him on instead of the A-list today, Frank Saravelli at 7 and Will Liu at 8:30. We have so much to go through this morning. It's actually crazy. It's like Monday sometimes it's just like Jays and some updates to the playoffs. We've got the biggest golfing moment possibly in Canadian sports. The Raptors finally hire a head coach. You got a Jays weekend that maybe was saved by Kevin Biggio-ish. You have the NHL playoff probably wrapping up tomorrow with Vegas taking a 3-1 lead. There's lots to go through. But I mean, this is it. Like it's lead in everyone's shows on the station today, but we'll take your thoughts at 590-590, where this ranks for you.
Two more things. One quickly on Nance's call. Like I, if you gave me like endless hours to come up with something, probably wouldn't have come up with that. Like pretty remarkable that he nailed it that way and coming up with something creative that, you know, there's going to be what, hundreds of Canadian writers talking about Nick Taylor over the weekend and into this week. And I'm not sure anyone would come up with that for their lead. So credit to Jim Nantz. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Why he's a legend.
But I do want to talk about one thing that actually happened in the playoff. And I call back
if you're talking about the grandstand.
Yes, yes. So I'm watching that. I want to bring back, because we talked to Nick Taylor a couple months ago.
Yeah, we did.
After he lost, not in a playoff, but in a final pairing with Scottie Scheffler at the Waste Management. And I asked Nick Taylor if PGA Tour players are punished enough for mistakes. Because, yeah, like you could hit it in the water. You can.
You remember this?
Hit it into the. Yes.
I remember because we talked last week.
I remember what I asked him if they get punished enough because Scottie Scheffler hammered a few off the grandstand and got to just chip on. And he had one shot where he still birdied after an errant shot, maybe on the big hole. Anyway, it was kind of annoying watching that because Taylor wasn't keeping up with Scheffler, but Scheffler had the benefit of all these breaks where it seemed like, hey, just slam it in the grandstand. You'll be fine. If I had a grandstand to slam things into,
I would slam it into the grandstand
and just take the drop and I'd be fine.
100%.
Speaking of grandstand, I hit over the grandstand at whatever.
We'll get to that.
So I'm thinking when that goes in and he gets a free drop, it's happening again because Nick Taylor said to us, it'll all even out. And it didn't even out. Like, he's going to lose this tournament because he's getting a free drop when he hit it into seats. He should be up in the seats hitting it off that.
He almost murdered those people.
If you were playing in that group, you wouldn't have let me get that free drop.
No way. I would have added five shots.
So he gets a free drop, and he doesn't take advantage of it, I guess. Yeah. Wait, that wasn't on the last hole. No, that was on two holes previously. So he doesn't take advantage of it.
I couldn't believe that he ended up.
And I'm, like, so mad because I'm like, he's losing on this. He's 100% losing on this, and he said it would bounce in his favor and that he would be the benefit of that. After he lost the waste management, I thought it was happening again, and I was about to lose my mind because my question was right, and he was wrong because it didn't you know, break even. But there's no way Fleetwood should get unpenalized.
I could not agree more.
And I'm glad justice was served because Nick Taylor deserved to win just based on what he did himself. But that free drop was bogus.
The ball went into the stands 30 feet up. Into people who were buckled, which was hilarious.
They picked up the ball, too.
Picked up the ball and taking selfies. And I'm like, oh, don't do that. But whatever. They probably don't even remember. But that should not be a free drop. I don't even care if it was Nick Taylor. That ball is out of play. It's in another world.
And it's because they put grandstands up, and that's not the natural course.
Come on.
I mean, that just seemed, again, we shouldn't belabor the point. It doesn't really matter.
But the golf gods.
The golf
I think
gods,
that's it. There's hockey gods.
He spoke
we
about
know
the golf
that.
Gods, and
golf
I guess in the end, the golf gods did even things up.
But
for
it would have been pretty pathetic if he had won with a free grand slam. Stand. I keep saying grand slam. Well, there were some grand slams. We've got tennis talk at
big grand slam weekend.
Later. But yeah, it would have been a little bit upsetting to see that one not go Nick Taylor's way. So that's huge, huge storyline going into it is. We got to talk to Nick Taylor, so maybe we've got the fan morning show bump. Corey Connor's going to win one maybe sometime soon. We had him on this last week, so.
Yeah, maybe it's like a five-month thing, four or five months.
See in 5 months.
Removed, yeah.
Whatever 5 months tournament would be by now. Anyway, I thought it was really great for the Canadian Open because nobody was talking about Liv. Nobody was talking about the merger. What a wonderful weekend to wrap up. I'm sure Crawdaddy could not be more happy this morning waking up. What a weekend for him. What a weekend for the Canadian Open. We did get a chance to go on Saturday. Definitely wasn't Sunday in terms of the electric atmosphere. We missed out on
the big game. I mean, it was still good.
Oh, no, I know. But
Crawdaddy still put on a great
I know.
Event.
I'm just saying we didn't get to see the walk-off triple OT win, but we had a really great time. We did get to do the whole zero that we spoke about. We let everybody down. We're kind of embarrassed. So let's just rip through what happened and move on.
Are we talking about hole zero?
Yeah, just
quickly. Well, I'm a moron. Like, I just went brain dead because I hit a club that I knew was not right.
There was kind of, like, pressure in the moment. Everyone's watching.
So you were invited. You're doing some social stuff, whatever. So we're doing content, I guess, while we're there. And I was trying to make a joke about how light hitting I am compared to you. Mm. And I'm like, you need a 6-iron or I need a 6-iron. You need like a 9. When really I was trying to just like exaggerate the difference between us hitting. When really I needed a 7-iron. So I go up there with the 6-iron you hit and I hit it over the wall that was backing up the hole. So like I didn't get the grandstand
drop. They
put
that wall there to avoid from having to chase the ball into the actual golf course.
I think I'm probably the only one who hit it over the wall because I just was dumb and picked the wrong club. You had
the opposite
your own
issue.
Struggles. Yeah.
I was way short, not even close to the green. This is 150 par three. I had to get two shots to get up to the green. And then
maybe three.
No, two shots. And I went on the green and then guess what? I three putted. Yeah. Surprise. Anyway, we both triple bogeyed par three, hole zero in front of fans and people watching. They had
thankfully there were not many people there.
Yeah, we
were
at the end of the day, but they had an entire, you know, they call you up on the tee from Sutton, Ontario, works for Sportsnet, Ailish, Four Bar, and you get up there and they have like real cameras and they've got like a, you know, system that's tracking your ball and you're up on the it was nerve-wracking and I blew it multiple times. They have a real caddy that drives you in the cart to your ball. Mm-hmm. We had to make a couple stops on the way to get mine. And yeah.
There was a real end of day vibe to it though. Like I felt like there wasn't pressure because it was actually hilarious. We were trying to like get in our double bogey putts and they were crowning the champion while we were still.
We weren't even done putting out.
It was like, you know, Nick Taylor wasn't obviously he hit the last putt of the whole tournament, but like Nick Taylor wins while Rory's still trying to finish his round on 18. That's pretty that much what happened. What it so like. It was embarrassing. There was a guy literally on someone's shoulders celebrating.
We have video footage.
Adam Hadwin style with champagne and everything while we were trying to make our double bogey putts.
I wouldn't even say it was a valiant effort. I would say that we disappointed. At least we tied and we can move on and not speak about this again.
Yeah.
But I will take my moment now to brag about the biggest win in FanEx Cup history. We did our picks last week. We both got an opportunity to pick two Canadians, and I said, I remember, I really like Nick Taylor this weekend. So I went Corey Connors, you went
Svensson,
and then you left me Nick Taylor. And I said, good, I really like Nick Taylor this weekend, plus 6,600. So I have taken a very, very dramatic lead in our FanEx Cup standings. I have $9,400 to Justin's $2,000.
Yeah.
So moving forward, you're going to have to think strategy-wise how the hell you're ever going to cover this ground, because I'm running away with it, buddy.
Well, you can't get it all back with one swing, so I'll just have to chip away. I don't know what the strategy will be, but I'll think about it before the U.S. Open this weekend. Golf is having a little moment here.
Lots of golf talk. What a great time to kind of lead into that. Canadian Open has a big moment after a tough start to the week with the drama going on, wrapped it up with a perfect bow. But I'm sure this week we're going to hear more. Now we can get into U.S. Open, and there'll be a lot of live PGA talk. There'll be a lot of players that, you know, it's a big field, big names.
A lot of guys who weren't in Toronto will be talking.
They'll be there. As I said, we're going to have Gunnar join us at 6:30 to talk about his experience being there. Adam Stanley at 8. We'll keep taking your thoughts and your texts on the Mount Rushmore moment in Canadian sports. But we got a couple other things to get through before we take a break, because I want to make sure we cover some of our bases.
Should we do Blue Jays and winners and losers and cover the Raptors now?
Yeah, I think so. We'll get into Blue Jays. They're off today, so we have a little bit of time. They're headed to Baltimore for some big, continuing with some big games, and then they go to play the Texas Rangers, who are red hot. So Blue Jays got, they just finished 30 games in 31 days, so let's take a little breath. They get a day off. We'll talk more Blue Jays at 7:30 then. But the Raptors hired a head coach. Surprise, surprise, after what, 6-7 weeks of waiting, lots of names being circulated, a lot of options, a lot of people taken off the board. Both Raptors head coach and assistant coach hired elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the, I don't know if it was a sleeper pick, the Darko horse.
Nice.
Our buddy, someone that we really didn't spend much time talking about, Darko Rajkovic,
I think.
No, that's the tennis version of it.
Say it again then.
Darko Rajkovic.
Darko Rajkovic. Okay. We're going to get it.
No, we got it.
We got it by the end of the day, no problem. Rajkovic.
It's not fully been confirmed yet, but it's confirmed by all the insiders that he will be the new Raptors head coach. Now, if you don't know much about Darko, he's had a bit of a lengthy coaching resume, really.
He might have to be Darko now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, it's Darko.
Darko.
Stop thinking about it.
Okay, Darko. Let's talk Darko. Darko chat.
Yeah, so he spent more than a decade working as an NBA assistant coach, and then he's got a lengthy experience before that, but he most recently was with the Memphis Grizzlies. He was the lead assistant coach to Taylor Jenkins. So I think this signals a lot about where the Raptors are going. A little bit maybe of a different vibe than just picking up the next available head coach who was fired. We saw that I think four major head coaches were fired that have won championships in like the last 6 years, right? It was just like, you're out. You didn't get any playoff success. Who's the next guy? And I think it would have been easy for the Raptors to kind of take a big name. They obviously waited a long time to find the right fit. Why is Darko Rajkovic the right fit? Well, I think that it's signaling that the Raptors want to focus more on their player development. We're going to talk to Will Liu at 8:30, and obviously he's been on the beat of who the Raptors are going to hire as a head coach. There's a lot of information that we had to kind of uncover about him. And what I've gained in my weekend of research is that he's very much into developing young players. He's very highly touted for being able to do that. He's had time in the G League in terms of developing players as well. So seems like a very strategic approach for maybe the direction of where the Raptors might go.
Yeah, I think it's actually fascinating in that sense, because everything that I've read about him is like, yeah, it's going to be... player development is a big thing, but also the different way of looking at it in terms of what the product looks like. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw a quote that he's in pursuit of, quote, beautiful basketball. And I don't think the Raptors have played beautiful basketball.
God,
even when they're winning
awful,
a championship,
ugly.
I don't think it's ever looked beautiful. I mean, there are certain teams where it looks beautiful. The Golden State Warriors have certainly played beautiful basketball in the last decade. And that seems somewhat elusive, but also seems like something that the Raptors really don't have with their own personnel. So I do think it signals some sort of change.
I agree.
I think it's development, and it's in pursuit of something specific. And if you have something that's pretty rigid in what it is already, at least it seems like, that means that change is coming, doesn't it? Like this coaching hire doesn't scream like, hey, let's do the best we can with what we have, or let's try to make some tweaks. That would be, hey, one of the assistants or one of the more tenured coaches that's available, given that there have been quite a few firings this year around the NBA. This feels like something where it's a hard reset and you want to do things completely different. And that is, I think, the right way to approach things, because mm-hmm. I do think this franchise is at a wall. I think it's hit a pretty hard ceiling, and I think it needs to change the way it goes about playing basketball and putting a basketball team together. So I'm hoping that this hiring means that, hey, we are looking at everything much differently, and I hope that means that, hey, we're going to have a different roster next year, and mm-hmm. we may take a step back here because we want to develop guys and we want to actually bring young players into the system that can have an impact eventually and can build together. I would love to see an organic build. And if anything, this hiring maybe screams is that's possible. Finally, maybe for the first time in the Masai Ujiri era, because it really has been, hey, let's just kind of, you know, keep a floor, get better, put ourselves into position where we can get a superstar in the mix and then try to win a championship. And it seems like, hey, can we do that again? Has been the modus operandi for the last 5 years or so, or 4 years since they won a championship. And this kind of screams hard reset to me.
This, to me, is the very first time I've felt like the Raptors have made a decision, and still lots to come, in terms of the direction that they should go and mm-hmm. they can go. We've been talking about this for
decisive.
Decisive.
And it may not be, but it seems decisive.
I mean, this is all we can glean, is you hire a head coach with clearly a specific skill set, a little bit off the board in a sense of bigger names that were available. You don't do that without 7 weeks or more of research. And why did you decide to go this route? I think it signals, as you mentioned, that they might be making the difficult decisions this offseason.
A light has flicked on over the last 2 months?
I think there's something serious about that. I mean, being seeing rumors about Fred VanVleet maybe finding a different home this offseason. If you're going to go with the younger, youthful team, this is the guy you'd want at the helm, right? So there's still so much to come in terms of roster decisions for the Toronto Raptors, but if you've strategically picked this man for this job, I think it signals a lot about maybe what Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster view this next 2 year development mm-hmm. process. Like, you can't run it back. I would be disappointed if they had hired, I wouldn't be maybe that's a bit.
No, you can.
I don't know if I'd be disappointed if they hired one of these big name head coaches. I think I'd be probably pretty happy. But if they just decided the same kind of solution, to say plug in the same pieces and do the same thing again with an experienced coach that has played with a similar roster, like, sure, maybe that's it. But we talked about it all season and at the trade deadline, being like, are you really good enough to compete? So maybe this means they take a little step back, get younger, and change their window.
I like how you put it there. It's not a, did you plug it back in hire? It's not like, oh, just like see if it works. If you unplug it, replug mm-hmm. it in. This seems different. And it may mm-hmm. not be. I mean, it could be a disaster if it's like, hey, let's bring in the development guy and give him no pieces to develop. Like, that would be an issue,
there's
right?
There's part two to this.
So, yeah,
sure.
It seems like, you know, Masai has to now follow through on what it seems like he's trying to do, of course. And you can't really ignore that the Portland Trailblazers apparently dangling that third pick.
Yeah.
And the Raptors definitely have pieces that can help
there.
Out. Like, this is stuff that you can't ignore. But just the last point on him. Apparently a huge basketball nerd, which makes sense given what we just talked about, but also apparently quit playing like really early, like way before you should stop playing basketball.
To focus on coaching.
Just focus on coaching. Like 16 years old to do this. Like,
he began his coaching career in Serbia at 16 years old.
Speaking of having a moment, Serbia's having a moment. Doing that so early, it's like that's when you should be enjoying sport, even if you're not playing at a high level, just like being a kid, having fun, enjoying playing sports. But he was so laser focused on this game and being great at this game that he realized at such a young age he was never going to be great on the floor and could be great in a different mm-hmm. way. that's pretty intriguing. That's like Dubas early on level stuff, right? Where it's like, wow, this whiz kid, right?
Hopefully they win something.
And I don't know if he's a whiz kid. That's too much to put him on already. But I love that this seems a little bit more inspired than the re-plug it in hire.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Unplug and rejig. I'm an electrician this morning.
I think it's a new appliance. Oh,
there you go. Okay, we've got lots to cover today. Vegas up 3-1. Probably going to see Stanley Cup moment tomorrow night. We'll get into that. Jays weekend. Biggio maybe salvages a little bit of a tough weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays with a late 3-run homer in the eighth yesterday. We'll touch on all that. We've got Gunning joining us on the other side of the break, though. We have to hear what it was like to be down on the ground, seeing that moment live. I know he's mentioned it might be one of the greatest moments he's ever covered in his journalistic career.
A smile on his face doesn't lie.
I wish I had been there, but we're going to live vicariously through Brent Gunning on the other side of the break.
Sports. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Back on the Fan Morning Show. It's Monday morning. Hey, we saw Alanis Morissette as well on Saturday night. She still got it. She's such a, like, if you blindfolded me and gave me a 5-second, not even, 2 seconds to recognize a voice, I think Alanis has got to be the easiest.
Yeah. Well, the harmonica, too.
She was harmonica-ing up.
When you can still lean on the harmonica in 2023, you're legit.
No, she crushed it. Friday night was Black Eyed Peas. Saturday night was Alanis Morissette. And Sunday, all day, was Nick Taylor. Brent Gunning, co-host of The Golf Show, one of our best friends, joins us this morning. Gunner, have you even slept a moment?
I got to be honest. I got home last night, still pumped. I like had one of these, like, you know, like we all do the wake up sometimes, like what time is it? And I looked at my phone and then there was just like text still coming in. I was like, I'm just back into it. I barely slept. I am so excited. What a moment. And for all the folks at Golf Canada and everybody who was there, man, just incredible.
Okay, so walk us through it. You were there all weekend. Obviously, you get to be there for the big moment. I know you followed, I think, Nick Taylor throughout the day, but just that big finale, the triple OT, the putter flip, the tackle, like, you can just like let us live through you, what you experienced, what it was like being there with the Canadian crowd.
Okay, so I gotta give kudos, first things first, to my fellow golf guy, Sam McKee. Mm-hmm. You know, we're sitting there, we're getting the lay of the land, trying to figure out the plan for the day, and you know, everyone's pumped up for Connors, they got that feel, and he said to me, I'm follow Taylor. He's our man today. I can feel it. And so I said, kudos to you. You go follow Taylor. I stood on the first tee, watched the big groups get off, and then I joined Taylor from 3 on. And it was incredible watching the momentum build. You know, obviously the big kind of crescendo moment before the ones at the end was him getting to the rink hole. Mm-hmm. They're singing O Canada for him. They're doing the chant that they like for Nick Foles in Philly at him. They're doing that a lot as well. It was just incredible. And then that's before we even get
to the
moment.
Chant, Gunner.
I don't think I'm allowed to say. Let me. How about this? If his name was Richard, it would make a lot of sense.
That. Good. I was just seeing how you'd spin that. You killed it. Okay, keep going.
I thought it was pretty good. Well, it's like, because I have a best bud named Richard, and he won't go by that, and it kills me. But that's a complete aside for another day. In the dead of summer, we don't have this to talk about. Then you go to 16. I'm trying to remember. 16, he has big up and down. Or, sorry, 16, he avoids.
Bogey 16?
He bogeys 16. And so then you're sitting there, you're going, uh-oh, probably birdie to get in. And then the walk down 18, you know it's going to be at the very least a birdie look for him. I mean, I'm filming it. The whole gallery's going nuts. Then he makes this incredible putt on 18 to win, but everyone there who was plugged into the leaderboard is saying, okay, he won, but probably a playoff, probably maybe not even a playoff. Fleetwood chokes it away at the end a little bit, and then, okay, here we go. We're off into a playoff, and then the back and forth and the swings and the missed putts, quite frankly, by both guys. And then he finally sinks it. Now, I had no idea it was 72 feet. I knew it was a bomb, but I had no idea it was that long. And then, you know, everyone, there was not a rushing of the green because there was, you know, a little different setup this year. But we're all milling about, and I'm just shaking hands with all the Golf Canada people you've been seeing all week. Everyone is ecstatic. And then out of nowhere, you just hear, yeah, and Adam Hadwin got tackled, and what? And then literally you're standing there on the green with photographers, and they're like, look at this picture, look at this. Guys are pulling up the amount of phones on the green of look at this right now that you're seeing. It is just truly, truly amazing. Like the fact that we were all living in this incredible moment, it was a very 2023 thing to have all these people pulling out their phones of look at this moment that happened 8 feet away that we were boxed out of by the incredible crowd. That is something, being in the throngs of it, I'll never forget. I was there walking with Rory when he won the thing last year. The crowd charged the green. I didn't think it could ever, I won't say better than that, because we always knew a Canadian winning would be better than that. But man, this lapped that by tenfold what I expected it to feel like. Just an incredible, incredible day.
So shaking hands, everyone showing your phone. Obviously, Hadwin getting tackled in the moments after is like the most memorable. What's the best thing, though, that you saw in the aftermath when everyone was celebrating and you're trying to figure out what to do after a Canadian, after 69 years, finally won this tournament?
I have two answers to that. The better answer for our purposes of this conversation is Hadwin's caddy just... Taylor's caddy just walking around the green with the flag and a huge bottle of champagne. That was just incredible. I could not stop snapping pics of that. And then this is a little more inside the game of Canada Golf, but you know, the director of sport, Kevin Blue, this guy is, he was locked in watching Taylor Saturday and Sunday, and just seeing the joy on his face. He's sitting there, he's telling me, yeah, this bottle of bubbly, it's going to the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame, because it's kind of the de facto trophy. Obviously the trophy always sits there, Taylor's caddy walking around, Canada flag in the pin, and the champagne under his arms. That's the thing I'm never going to forget. And then also just Connors, Hadwin, and Weir standing by in jeans and shorts. Golfers without golf clothes always kind of look like dogs on roller skates. So that was just weird in and of itself. And then looking at Mike Weir taking it all in. You know, that was a big moment for everybody there. He's kind of the guy who created that, but that is also, like, you know, it's a little weird to say this, as I've got my own Nick Taylor Jr., my son, practicing his golf swing behind me. But it's like, it's kind of like watching your son. It's kind of like watching your son do something you couldn't. You know, Mike Weir played in a playoff at the Canadian Open and went to three playoff holes. He lost to Vijay Singh. And you'd be hard-pressed to think that that wasn't going through his mind. It's the duality of life. He's so incredibly happy for Taylor, but how could you not think about that moment and what could have been for yourself? You know, I go back to all the people who've been involved in this game, in this country, for so long. And, you know, Brooke Henderson's moment's getting lost a little bit. It was a weird time when she won the Canadian Open, but Sunday, prime time in the biggest city in our country, it's just... Man, it's incredible, and I'm still basking in the glow. I sound like Taylor. I'm just saying it's incredible over and over again.
Well, it was
everything.
Truly...
You got to say everything. If it was, it was...
It's true. And he stole that line from somebody. He couldn't even come up with it himself.
There,
but
you
yeah,
go. I mean, I think it would be hard, because he did author one of the greatest moments in our country's sporting history, and you were there to witness it. So he's obviously the biggest winner. But who's next? Like, what benefits? Who benefits? Like, who does this mean almost as much to as Nick Taylor? Like, is the RBC Canadian Open, you know, launch into outer space based on this? Like, who really, really benefits from this moment?
I think you have to look at it as golf in Canada. And I don't think there's one stakeholder that is going to benefit in the next, outside of Nick Taylor, in the next, you know, 3 years, 5 years from this. It is incredible that the monkey is off the back. And for the first time in nearly 70 years, a man was able to do it. But if anything, you know, I'm not going to say it takes away from the buildup to it, because now you have Taylor looking to defend his title and all that, but that's been done. The thing has been ticked off the box. So I don't know that it adds a boon for the RBC Canadian Open. I think the tournament has become a winner because of all the incredible finishes you've got at the tail ends of the last seasons. But when you look at what happened at the tournament or the winners that are going to come out of it, I think it's going to be golf in Canada, because how can you see a moment like that? And, you know, I don't want to overstate it that, you know, 100,000 kids are going to run out there in the rain and go pick up their sticks and go try to be the next Nick Taylor. But a couple are. And I think a moment like that, having it, it's impossible to overstate what it can do. You know, they have a goal to have 30 pros on the PGA and LPGA tours by 2030. And, you know, maybe it's a little too late to help with that, but 35, 40, it's only going to boost the numbers. So just an incredible moment for Canada golf. They're far and away the biggest winners out of this.
We're talking to Brent Gunning, one of the golf guys, of course, who was down there live at Oakdale all weekend and got to see one of the greatest moments in our sporting history. And you're saying it's great for the next generation. I can hear little boy Gordo in the background.
Sorry,
yeah?
I'm sorry, but
No. I think it's actually really special. Like, and not to go back on the exact same point, but you're right. It is about, you know, the next generation. I don't know. Golf isn't always the sport that we're all tuned in on the weekend, but it felt like the entire country was watching what Nick Taylor was doing. People I know that don't even care about golf were texting me like, "Are you watching the golf stuff?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm watching the golf stuff." Like it just felt like a huge uniting moment. And you're right, you know, you got a little kid in the background playing golf. Like it's really sweet to see. But why was it Nick Taylor? Because, you know, all week we're talking Corey Connors, it's his moment. But I don't know how many people were, you know, giving Nick Taylor his moment, and he earned it. But, like, what was it about Nick Taylor this weekend long, especially with the way he started, and then he had the course record, you know, a day later? Like, how did he, was he able to pull this out, maybe against some of the odds that was stacked against him?
Yeah, very very slight asterisk on that course record, because this course was created this week.
I know, I laughed
week.
At that too. Like, well, anyone was shooting the course record.
Well, it's also, the good thing is that the course record will now for sure stand until the next time they play it, because nobody gets to play it in that order. You know, I got to be honest. I made my quip about the course record, and I forgot what your question was. I'm still
just like, why it was Nick Taylor's moment. Oh, okay, and not, yes. You know,
okay,
Corey
so
Connors.
You look at Connors, and look, he's had the scar tissue before, and a lot of times you'll say you need scar tissue to win, but sometimes scar tissue prevents you from doing things. And, you know, when Taylor was looking so dialed early on in that round, I said to my fellow golf guy, and I'll sneak in a plug, we'll have an emergency pod out later today.
Perfect.
I said to him, you just feel so much better about this being Taylor than you would if it was Connors. And, you know, I would feel a kind of similar way about it if it was Adam Hadwin. He was really locked in. Unfortunately, with Corey, we have just seen so many versions of this movie before, where mm-hmm. he's right there in the mix and he just can't seem to get it done. With Taylor, he had everything going today. And I think that he doesn't quite have the high-end ball striking that Connors has, but he just has a little more well-rounded game. And, you know, we see that all the time in sports, that, yeah, you can do one or two things elite, but what's the well-rounded game? Like, is it the strongest link of the chain or the weakest link that makes it? And Taylor just didn't have a lot of weak links. And, you know, I think he's helped a lot by the fact that the guy who's in that playoff with him, Fleetwood, he's had a lot of moments where he hasn't come through in the clutch either. So I think for Taylor, it was mentality is the biggest thing. You know, just watching him, following him so closely, he was barely blinking. He did a walk and talk interview on the 14th hole.
That was
and
crazy,
that even
eh?
didn't faze him. He said he agreed to do it yesterday and then agreed to do it on the Saturday, was supposed to do it on the Saturday and stuck with it. The fact that didn't flap him just kind of tells you everything you need to know about what he had going on yesterday. So that's why I think it was Taylor, was the fact that it was just a really, really well-rounded game. You know, probably if you look at every other marquee Canadian, there's maybe a thing that they do better. You know, Mac Hughes has the knack for the long bomb putt, although I don't think we could say that after a 72-footer for Eagle. Taylor Pendrith and Corey Connors, those are the guys who really, really bomb it. And Connors is always the best iron player, but Taylor's just kind of a, you know, a mix of those, and he doesn't quite have the high-end level, but there's really no weak part in the game, and there definitely wasn't yesterday, outside of some squirrely moments at the end. But that's the weight of the country getting to you. That's not your golf game. So.
Yeah, but it's a decent spot to be in, though, because if everything's clicking, you can contend, and he contended earlier this year at the Waste Management, and now of course wins the RBC Canadian Open, so it definitely works for him. Did it work for him that it was Tommy Fleetwood in the end in this playoff with him? We know Tommy Fleetwood's history, he can't get it done himself. I think, you know, I kind of answered my own question a little bit there, but just a comment on that, but also how hard it was to be Fleetwood in that moment? Like, was it difficult for him to overcome that crowd? Was the crowd difficult on him? Was it fair? I mean, the free drop wasn't necessarily fair. But, like, how was Fleetwood's reality compared to Taylor's reality? And was that the right opponent for Taylor in the end?
There's definitely something to it being the right opponent, but let's not forget, on the first playoff hole, Fleetwood nails an absolutely nails downhill. I was talking with one of the guys who caddies at the club there, and he's telling me how tough that putt is, and Fleetwood just nails it to really put the pressure on Taylor, who, kudos to him, he answered. They go play 18 again, and 7 hours after that, Taylor's your Canadian Open champ. So there's a little something to that with Fleetwood being the kind of right guy in that spot for Taylor. But I think the other thing you also have to look at with it is that he did make that big putt. So it wasn't just a case of him handing it to Taylor. Quite frankly, they took turns handing it to each other before Nick just ripped the thing out of his hands. In terms of the crowd reaction, don't get me started on that free drop. It's the dumbest rule in golf.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a temporary removal of obstruction. It's only been there all week. And in the entire, forget all week, it was there when I played the course like a month ago for media day. So the idea of, oh, gee, who could have foreseen this stand being there? Better give him a free drop. It is a dumb rule everywhere in golf. It was a dumb rule yesterday. And then lastly, just on the way the fans kind of treated him, reacted to him, I was really curious to see how that was going to go. It was about 25% Ryder Cup with cheering for missed shots. But the nice Canadians we are, we couldn't help ourselves from also cheering from great Fleetwood shots, like the amount of begrudged, ah, oh, that's great. That's great, Tommy. And a big hand he was getting there. So I think it was a good crowd, very Canadian, in that they were cheering the misses. They were happy about that, but still giving him his due when he came through. And then, again, Taylor, 72 feet per eagle.
Crazy. I'm so happy you got an opportunity to experience that moment, Gunnar. I know you've got to cover a lot of golf or be around a lot of golf, but you said it, that's going to be one that you never forget. So thanks for coming on this morning. Go get that kid ready for his chance at the Canadian Open in a couple of years, all right?
Yeah, I think like 20, I don't know, 37,
yeah,
something like that.
I'm already looking at the odds. Okay, I'll be putting a futures bet on him.
All right, sounds good. I might want to jump in on that, so we'll do that together. Thanks so much. And
thanks,
again, Emergency Golf Show pod coming later today.
Perfect. We'll be sure to tee that up later as well. Thanks, Gunnar. Chat soon.
Take care.
Brent Gunning, what a really, really cool moment for him.
One of many celebrating around the 18th green. Yeah, we were there Saturday, as you mentioned, a little bit different, mm-hmm. little different vibe, but we even struggled with that. Like, he's an expert. He knows how to follow guys around.
Yeah,
he knows what he's
tips.
Doing. I was like, Sam has that great idea, and they execute it. We had so many ideas, and we executed none of them.
We were rookies. They're yeah. vets. They're pros. Okay, we'll talk lots more golf today. We'll have our buddy Adam Stanley on at 8 o'clock, who of course was there all weekend long. He got to talk to Nick Taylor after he won. So we'll get kind of like, just like the vibe, like how do you even put words together if you're Nick Taylor? He struggled, but I don't blame him. Frank Saravelli joins us over the break here. Looks like could be the end of the line for Florida tomorrow night. Vegas obviously has the opportunity to win on home ice. Do we see the Stanley Cup lifted tomorrow night?